Welcome to the KHSU Magazine. I'm Natalia Estrada, and I'm here with the North Coast Journal's Jennifer Fumiko Cahill and Thaddeus Greenson. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
What do we have in store for us today?
We've got a lot going on in the paper this week. And in the back of the book, we have a table talk about a fairly new business in Humboldt. It is called Caroline's Texas Barbecue. And if you were at 4th of July in Eureka, in Old Town this year, you would have seen them doing a brisk business in brisket. Pulled brisket and pulled pork. And they even made a sandwich. They did ribs also, but you could even get half brisket and half pulled pork on one sandwich.
Oh, man.
Which, that's all I want. I want the decision-making taken out of my hands. And I just want to eat all the meat.
That's so fulfilling. I don't want to choose. I just want...
all the meats. Half and half. So you can be like traveling back and forth from one side of your sandwich to the other. Anyway, it's Texas barbecue, which is a little bit different. So I spoke to the owners. So that is Chef John Chafin and his wife, Caroline. And he is born and raised in Humboldt. He went to Arcata High and everything. And he has an interesting story of how he came to barbecue. He didn't grow up in a barbecuing family per se, but he had a life-changing roast somewhere in the 1980s. And the taste of that roast, you know, haunted his dreams. And the closest thing to that taste for him has been like, you know, when you barbecue meat and then you carve it up and there are little bits left on the cutting board. And you sort of eat at those little bits. Whoever has the job of carving meat in their family knows
the bits
that this
best.
Is the truth of, yeah, that this is the truth of meat and why you really take on the task of carving the meat. That taste of, you know, when you roast a brisket and there's the little meat bits stuck on the cutting board, that's what he's always pursuing. So he's kind of a self-taught barbecue guy. And he was working on doing all kinds of, you know, briskets and ribs and pork and things, you know, experimenting on the side of his business, Johnson Auto Electric.
That's way different, actually.
Yeah, it really
quite
is.
A contrast.
And then somewhere along the way, he met his wife, Caroline, who's from San Antonio, Texas. And they went to Texas together and they had this brisket. And while he loved it, he was like, I can do this better. And then he began pursuing the Texas style of barbecue. And Texas barbecue is a little bit different. You know, American barbecue has lots of regional varieties. Mm-hmm. And Texas barbecue is not about sauce. It's all about a dry rub and flavoring the meat beforehand. And not, you know, you're not going to get like a big, sticky, wet barbecue experience. And in fact, the pulled pork and the brisket are served without sauce typically.
Okay, I mean, so you were describing this, and I was just like, oh, I love sauce. Anyways, but now I'm just thinking about it, and I was like, how are they doing this? This is a disgrace.
I know, but then you really actually... taste the meat. You really taste the meat.
Yeah.
Sauce is available. They have sauce as an option.
For those people like me who just need it.
Right. But Caroline, for example, herself, has her favorite is the pulled pork. She eats it without sauce. And it's a long, you know, overnight, low and slow barbecuing process. And honestly, I did not feel that it needed sauce. I am with you, Texas. But there are some things, despite John's, you know, skill and everything that he's learned to do, and that, I mean, the meat is for real. It's fantastic. There are a lot of things he can't do fully on his own anymore, partly because he has lymphoma, which contracted from being, when he was in the Marine Corps. He was at Camp Lejeune, and Camp Lejeune had a contamination issue that's led to a lot of people developing cancer. And so now he's on disability, so now he and his wife share the work at Johnson Auto. Like, she's running a lot, and there's a lot of stuff that he can't do anymore, partly because his hands seize up, which is one of the symptoms. It's also caused him to stop riding his Harley Davidson. But as he puts it, now he just kind of points and shouts, and that's how... they get the barbecue done. He can make the rub. He can still take the meat on and off and everything. But sometimes the carving and things like that, he needs help with. It's a pretty cool little business. And they're right now in transition and trying to figure out if they're going to keep doing catering and festivals, or if eventually they want to try and do a brick and mortar. But it's a cool little local business that if you see the stand, go to the stand.
All right, Thad, what can you tell me on your end of the journal this week?
Yeah, so on the news side of things this week, we have a story that's was looking at the efforts of two North Coast lawmakers to respond to what they saw last week in Helsinki, Finland, in the news conference between Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin, which obviously caused widespread criticism and backlash of our president. And I think what's interesting about, the effort of Congressman Jared Huffman and State Senator Mike McGuire is that I think over the course of especially the last couple of weeks, we've seen a lot of lawmakers making kind of fiery statements. But we haven't seen a lot of lawmakers on any side of the aisle taking anything that would constitute action that would, be an affirmative step to either address what they saw in Finland or kind of to prevent similar situations from maybe playing out in the future. So Congressman Huffman gave a very fiery speech on Wednesday on the House floor, in which he called Trump's performance in Finland a stunning betrayal, and questioned whether Putin has blackmail material on the president or the president has some financial conflict of interest that compromises him. Things we've certainly heard before, but he also announced that he's introducing legislation that he thinks might prevent a similar situation from playing out in the future. So he's introducing legislation that he's calling the Protecting Access to Classified Information in Elections Act. And so what the act would do, if passed into law, is would allow candidates for president and vice president to go through a vetting process, essentially like a security clearance vetting process undertaken by the Secret Service and the Department of Justice that would analyze, their financial ties and anything that could be kind of compromising material.
Isn't that expected of people who work in the White House, especially these super important positions, to already have like the extreme vetting done? Or is that not actually common?
Well, so what's interesting to me is that, virtually everybody who holds kind of a decision-making or an advisory role in the White House does undergo a really extreme vetting process to get a security clearance. But the president and the vice president don't. And, the rationale behind that is kind of that the election itself is a vetting process. It's a chance for, the American people to ask questions and demand answers and choose the candidates they think are most fit.
Elections aren't exactly always transparent. I mean, I don't feel like they are. I don't know if other people don't, but that kind of seems like a cop-out.
Yeah, well, it's something I don't know that the nation has really contemplated before. But I think Huffman's bill is definitely designed to increase transparency mm-hmm. in that role. And so it would be voluntary. Candidates would have to choose to go through it. But the idea would be that that any candidate kind of worth his or her salt would want a stamp of approval from the Justice Department saying that they've been vetted and they would be due a clearance, essentially that they're trustworthy. And if a candidate opted not to go through that process, it would be a big red flag for voters. Now, I think everybody should accept this for what it is. It has very little chance of being passed into law, at least under the current Congress.
Okay.
But it is something that if the balance of power in Congress changes, could potentially move forward next year. So then also on Wednesday of last week, as I said, McGuire announced that he's reintroducing legislation that he introduced last year, which would require presidential candidates in California, in order to appear on the primary ballot, to release 5 years of their tax returns. And so he obviously introduced this last year in response to Trump's refusal to release his tax returns, kind of bucking decades of precedent and presidential politics. And the bill passed last year, passed both it unanimously passed the Senate and then passed the Assembly too, but was then vetoed by the governor, Jerry Brown.
Oh, wow. Brown wasn't on that.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting argument. So Brown questioned the legality of it, saying that he didn't know that a state could essentially take actions to regulate a federal election. I'm not sure about that. I'm no attorney. But then also raised the concern that this could kind of create a slippery slope where other states would feel the need to enact other regulations on who could or couldn't appear on the ballot or what steps they would need to take. And so he kind of asked rhetorically, what would keep a state from then requiring somebody to release their birth certificate before appearing on the ballot, or requiring somebody to release years of health information or other things that have been items of interest in presidential elections recently.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me. I appreciate it. And it's always interesting to learn about what our local politicians are up to.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.